The solemn proclamation of independence having been read, the Prime Minister addresses his audience, the Rhodesian nation.
Today, now that the final stalemate in negotiations has become evident, the end of the road has been reached. It has become abundantly clear that it is the policy of the British government to play us along with no real intention of arriving at a solution which we could possibly accept. Indeed, in the latest verbal and confidential message delivered to me last night, we find that on the main principle which is in dispute, the two governments have moved further apart. I promised the people of this country that I would continue to negotiate to the bitter end, and that I would leave no stone unturned in my endeavours to secure an honourable and mutually accepted settlement. It now falls to me to tell you that negotiations have come to an end. No one could deny that we have striven with might and main, and at times leant over backwards to bridge the gap which divides us from the British government. My ministers and I have not arrived at this decision without the deepest heart searching. We have sat for days in ceaseless conference trying to find any possible way of achieving negotiated independence, as we undertook to the country that we would do. But I would be failing in my duty to all of you who live in Rhodesia if I was to permit this country to continue to drift in the present paralyzing state of uncertainty. The bitter lesson of the Federation is constantly in the forefront of my mind. In that case, matters were permitted to drift and plans for action were formulated too late to prevent the destruction of this noble concept of racial harmony. However, Rhodesia has not rejected the possibility of racial harmony in Africa. The responsibility for the breakup of the Federation was Great Britain's alone. Their experiment failed, and they are now trying to foist this same dogma onto Rhodesia. We are determined that the same will never be allowed to happen here. Let no one believe that this action today marks a radical departure from the principles by which we have lived, or be under any misconception that now the Constitution will be torn up and that the protection of the rights of all peoples which are enshrined in that Constitution will be abrogated and discarded. Neither let it be thought that this event marks a diminution in the opportunities which our African people have to advance and prosper in Rhodesia. Far from this being the case, it is our intention, in consultation with the chiefs, to bring them into the government and administration as the acknowledged leaders of the African people on a basis acceptable to them. It is our firm intention to abide by the Constitution. Indeed, we have never asked for anything other than independence on the basis of the present Constitution, and only such amendments are included as are necessary to adapt it to that of an independent country. With regard to the position of members of Parliament, judges, civil servants, and members of the armed forces, as well as the police, provision has been made for all of them to carry on their duties, and all are deemed to have complied with the requirements of the new Constitution. They will continue to carry on their normal work. All present laws shall continue to operate, and the courts will enforce them in the normal manner. We are doing no more than assuming the rights which various British ministers have in the past indicated were ours. And in fact, this Constitution was the one which would carry us to independence. Let no one be persuaded that this action marks a change in our attitude towards our neighbours in Africa, to whom we have ceaselessly extended the hand of friendship, and to whom we have nothing but goodwill and the best of intentions. We have never sought, nor will we ever seek to interfere or in any way attempt to influence their policy in their internal affairs. All we ask in return is their goodwill in permitting us to look after what are, after all, our own private and domestic matters. I wish to make it quite clear, as indeed I have on many occasions in the past, that we in this country have no quarrel whatsoever with the people of Great Britain. The differences of opinion which we have are entirely with successive British governments. The people of Britain are the kith and kin of many Rhodesians, and the people with whom we have the closest affinity, both in our way of life and in our conception of justice and civilization. How can anyone suggest that we would harbour hostile sentiments against those with whom we fought shoulder to shoulder against the common enemy in two world wars? Our admiration and friendship for the people of Great Britain is real and enduring. Let there be no doubt that we in this country stand second to none in our loyalty to the Queen. And whatever else other countries may have done or may yet do, it is our intention that the Union Jack will continue to fly in Rhodesia and the national anthem continue to be sung. Most of you, I know, have longed for this day, but a few, on the other hand, have had reservations. However, I would say to you that there can be no future for this great and splendid country of ours if we are to remain drifting in this constitutional twilight. To those who believe that it would be in our own interests to continue as we are, I would point out that the British Prime Minister implied in a speech to Parliament on his return from Rhodesia that should the result of the Royal Commission go against Rhodesia, the British government reserved the right to call a conference, which further implied the changing of our constitution as a result. It would appear that if this is the British government's real intention, we shall not be allowed to go on as we are, even if there had been a Royal Commission. There can be no solution to our racial problems, while African nationalists believe that provided they stir up sufficient trouble, they will be able to blackmail the British government into bringing about a miracle on their behalf by handing the country over to irresponsible rule. There can be no happiness in this country while the absurd situation continues to exist, where people such as ourselves, who have ruled ourselves with an impeccable record for over 40 years, are denied what is freely granted to other countries who have ruled themselves in some cases for no longer than a year. There can never be long-term prosperity, which is so necessary for the nurturing of our endeavours to improve the standard of living and increase the happiness and better the lot of all our people, whilst the present uncertainty exists. No businessman could ever seriously contemplate massive long-term investment in a country in which chaos and confusion were always future possibilities. Whatever the short-term economic disadvantages may be, in the long term, steady economic progress would never be achieved unless we are masters in our own house. To those of you who fear the short-term effects of economic sanctions, I would say that whilst we in no way minimize the possible hardship and inconvenience they may bring about, nonetheless, we are firmly convinced that in the long run, because of our natural resources and the enterprise of our people, there will be brought about a prosperous and better future for everyone. Week after week, we have seen businessmen passing through here on their way to South Africa, who, with few exceptions, say that while this state of uncertainty continues, they will not even contemplate a serious investigation of the possibility of investment. However, they also say that once we have solved our constitutional difficulties and are independent, then they will be very interested in undertaking serious investigations and inquiry with a view to investing. That some economic retributions will be visited upon us, there is no doubt. Those who seek to damage us do not have any great concern for the principles to which they endlessly pay lip service. For if they really believed in these principles which they ceaselessly proclaim, then they could not possibly connive at the many disasters which have been brought about by the premature withdrawal of European influence from countries in Africa and Asia, who were nowhere near ready for it. There is no doubt that the talk of threats and sanctions is no more than appeasement to the United Nations, the Afro-Asian bloc, and certain members of the Commonwealth, and undoubtedly some action will be taken. But I cannot conceive of a rational world uniting in an endeavor to destroy the economy of this country, knowing, as they undoubtedly do, that in many cases the hardest hit would be the very people on whose behalf they would like to believe they are invoking these sanctions. We, for our part, will never do anything in the nature of taking revenge on any neighboring African state for what other countries may do to us. But it is nonetheless inevitable that if our economy should contract as a result of such actions taken by others, then what jobs were available would have to be reserved for our own Africans, thus bringing hardship not only on our own people, but also those people from adjoining territories who work here. If, as some have predicted, there are repercussions elsewhere in Africa, I would warn those people who contemplate taking action that it will be their actions and not ours that have precipitated these events. Whatever the consequences may be, and whatever difficulties may present themselves, we are a people who, in the past, have survived and prevailed in circumstances of the utmost adversity. The mantle of the pioneers has fallen on our shoulders, and we will, I am sure, be able to face any difficulties which may occur, fortified by the same strength and courage which distinguished our forefathers in days gone by. I do not believe that many of the extreme consequences which have been forecast by various would-be Cassandras, both here and abroad, will come to pass. But whatever may befall us, I have the profoundest confidence and belief in the determination of our people to stand united and to prevail in the face of any adversity. The safety of our homes and the freedom of our people alike depend upon the conduct of each one of us at this critical time. In the lives of most nations, there comes a moment when a stand has to be made for principle, whatever the consequences. This moment has come to Rhodesia. I pray, and I hope other Rhodesians will also pray today, that our government will be given the wisdom and the strength to bring Rhodesia safely through. I call upon all of you in this historic hour to support me and my government in the struggle in which we are engaged. I believe that we are a courageous people, and history has cast us in a heroic role. To us has been given the privilege of being the first Western nation in the last 2 decades to have the determination and fortitude to say, so far and no further. We may be a small country, but we are a determined people who have been called upon to play a role of worldwide significance. We Rhodesians have rejected the doctrinaire philosophy of appeasement and surrender. The decision which we have taken today is a refusal by Rhodesians to sell their birthright. And even if we were to surrender, does anyone believe that Rhodesia would be the last target of the communists and the Afro-Asian bloc? We have struck a blow for the preservation of justice, civilization, and Christianity. And in the spirit of this belief, we have this day assumed our sovereign independence. God bless you all.
The British government reacted sharply to Rhodesia's unilateral declaration. A bill was rushed through Parliament enabling Her Majesty's government to amend or revoke the Rhodesian constitution and to apply sanctions against her former colony. Rhodesian reserves in Great Britain were seized. Mr. Wilson appealed to the United Nations for support to end the so-called rebellion. An oil embargo was declared and enforced by the British government. Rhodesia tightened her belt. But she was still obtaining her vital supplies from other sources. And the Rhodesian people of every race and color became united as never before in the face of the common threat. Mr. Smith broadcast a New Year's Eve message to the nation.
On this New Year's Eve, 1965, we, the people of Rhodesia, have much to be thankful for. After 43 years of successful government, we are at last an independent, sovereign nation, a nation to which we can dedicate ourselves with pride and determination. Rhodesia, as you know, is a wonderful country, richly endowed with resources of all kinds. But I would say to you that the most important and the greatest of all our resources is in the strength, knowledge, skills, and above all, the dedicated loyalty of all the Rhodesian people. On the day we assumed our independence, Rhodesia stepped forward calmly and confidently into a new future. In the weeks which have passed since then, our country has continued to be a model of peace and stability, which is the envy of countries less fortunate than ours. This peace and tranquility has been maintained in the face of the most appalling threats of all kinds. It has been maintained in the face of punitive sanctions and the masterly, vicious, and even vindictive propaganda of a country which we once held in the highest esteem. Rhodesians, strong in the knowledge that their cause is a right and a just one, have merely smiled in the face of such actions. We know that behind the smile, there is the resolution of a united people, ready and willing to meet any threat. We will emerge from this exercise a far, far stronger nation and a more united nation than ever before in our history. Indeed, all that has happened so far merely reinforces us in our conviction that on that historic day we took the right step for the preservation of civilization in this part of the African continent. Moreover, I am convinced that when the final story of Rhodesia's successful struggle for nationhood is written, history will recount the retribution which in turn will be exacted from those who today dance the tune of world communism in the guise of democratic institutions.
At the Commonwealth Prime Minister's Conference in Lagos on January the 14th, Mr. Wilson accepted that the use of force against Rhodesia could not be precluded. However, no suggestions were made as to who would supply and finance a force of sufficient strength. But the screws were tightened on Rhodesia. That same month, a total embargo on all trade was declared. Belts were tightened a little more. But there was no sign of the Rhodesian defenses cracking. On February the 10th, Mr. Smith again broadcast to the Rhodesian people, reviewing the first 3 months of independence.
90 days have passed since we became independent, and I think it appropriate to make a brief summary. So far, things have gone better than we anticipated in most spheres. In the financial war, in spite of his unscrupulous, indeed immoral actions, we have beaten Mr. Wilson, thanks to the magnificent combined efforts of the Ministry of Finance and our central bank. In the war to boycott the purchase of Rhodesian goods, once more we are managing to beat Mr. Wilson every day due to the quality of our products and the efforts of all those concerned. In the propaganda war, because of the wonderful spirit and the sound common sense of the Rhodesian people, Mr. Wilson's efforts have been thrown back in his face. The record shows that Mr. Wilson gave undertakings that sanctions would not be punitive or vindictive, and indeed that they would not be taken to the stage where they would harm the Rhodesian economy. What has happened? In actual fact, Mr. Wilson's actions have been a model of vindictiveness, and if the word punitive is inappropriate, this can only be because it is too mild for the circumstances. Already, because of the actions of one man, bitterness has been engendered in Rhodesia against Britain. This man is also responsible for severing the very strong economic links which have been built between our two countries over the past 75 years. The same man is responsible for bringing into disrepute the good name of British banking institutions and trust houses. I am advised that the estimate already made in Britain that this Rhodesian exercise will cost the British nation £300 million per annum is an underestimate. The same man is prepared to squander on an abortive face-saving exercise this considerable sum of money which he is taking away from the British taxpayer.
Mr. Smith went on to talk about the impossibility of attempting to legislate for Rhodesia by politicians divorced from the issues involved by both distance and sentiment. He continued,
"We here in Rhodesia know what the Rhodesian wants, to be left alone, to get on with his work and to solve his problems. And since November the 11th, he is even more certain, more definite in his mind about this. Fortunately, this applies not only to the European, but to the African as well. The feeling which is growing through all sections of our community is that we are all Rhodesians and we all live in Rhodesia. So let's get together and sort out our future free from outside interference."
Finally, the Prime Minister summed up, expressing not only the convictions of his government, but also the sentiments of the electorate on the course they had taken.
"The truth, which is conceded even by our enemies, is that the people of Rhodesia have never before in our history been so united in their support of a government. As reported in the news columns last week, a sample survey by a visiting Canadian journalist revealed 96% support for our government. This should be no surprise to anyone who knows what the alternative will be. It was made very clear in the letter sent by Mr. Wilson to a prominent African nationalist shortly before the Labour Party came to power. And this has been Labour's consistent policy ever since, namely that the 1961 Constitution, with its evolutionary process, is too slow and must be changed to a pattern of rapid handover as soon as possible, even if this means a repetition of the breakdown of civilization and democracy such as we have witnessed to our north, even if this means that communism takes another step forward on the African continent. We all know that the decision we took on the 11th of November was the only possible one open to us if we are to maintain our country and our civilization. That day, we saw the true birth of our Rhodesian nation, and with every day that passes, we are becoming stronger and more united.